the Braves, the Bravos, the team of the 90s, or whatever else you want to call them.
0-1 pitch, Harris wrecks one. Deep right field, that is out of the ballpark again. A three-run home run.
The Upstate's home for the 18-time NL East champs, the Atlanta Braves. We are the Roar, where every day is game day.
We welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Faxon and John continues right here on The Roar. Before we hop back into the action, I want to tell you about our friends at Mahindra of Anderson. If you're looking for a tractor that works as hard as you do, you need to go with the folks at Mahindra of Anderson. It's your local source for the toughest, most reliable tractors on the market. Whether you're working the farm, maintaining your property, or need heavy-duty power, Mahindra has the perfect tractor, UTV, implement, or trailer for the job. You can buy it new. You can shop pre-owned, or you can schedule your service appointment or order parts with the best customer service in the Upstate. Visit Mahindra of Anderson at 507 Pierman Dairy Road, or online at mahindraofanderson.com. 654-ROAR is the number if you want to hop in. We're talking clubs and football, and the text line is blowing up. If you want to get in on the phone lines, the number is the same. So, Texter gets in and says, Clemson's offense was as good against a really good Texas defense. Clemson's offense was very mediocre against any other team that had equal talent last year. I do want to push back on this a little bit to a certain degree. All right, number one, you have to account for the fact that Clemson essentially played the second half of their season without a run game, right? You didn't trust the depth in your running back room. Phil Moffa was super banged up and injured. And I feel like, out of all fairness, that has to be a part of the equation here. Because when you look at how Garrett Riley wants to call a game, Garrett Riley wants to be run-centric, truly. He was 50-50 split at TCU with run to pass, and that's part of the reason they were so successful with Duggan and Miller and Johnston and all those guys, is they had a balance. And, you know, I understand that Clemson lost to South Carolina last year, right? And we're referring to that as one of the teams with an equal talent level, and I get that, and that can be well and true to an extent. But on the same tangent, how much different do some of the results look at the back half of the season if Clemson has a healthy Phil Moffa or a viable run game that's capable of being relied upon? Because you also have to account for down and distance in these situations, right? Your first down play calling is severely impacted by your lack of a run game. So if you don't trust the ability to get 4 or 5 yards on the ground on first down, and you will go incomplete on first down, that changes the entire dynamic of your drive. That's a large part of why you lost the Louisville game in the fashion you did, is because you couldn't run the ball. So you look up at the end of the game and you're like, man, it feels like we got pretty much nothing. Yeah, that's essentially what it was. And yeah, you know, Moffa got some big runs towards the back half of that game, but the game was over in the beginning of the third quarter.
Well, I think a lot of that game, I mean, yes, you were able to put up 14 points in the fourth quarter to make it look respectable. Phil Moffa did have a great day against Louisville, 30 carries for 171 yards and 2 touchdowns. But after that is when everything fell off for him.
They ran him for no reason in the fourth quarter of that game, and he got his numbers, but like Clemson legitimately K'd through 56 times. Like, they ran 45 and threw 50. Like, this game is more mind-numbing. Sorry to interrupt, John. I don't even understand how this game happened, to be honest with you.
Well, I think it was a lack of urgency for the first three quarters by the offense, and then the defense not performing very well in that game.
Yeah, and when Louisville was allowed to control the game in the way that they controlled the game, you put yourself in these type of situations. Like, look at some of these drives from Clemson in the Louisville game, which people are referencing, all right? You come out and you three and out punt, run for 3 yards, false start, completion for no gain, completion for 3 yards, punt. Then you go three and out again, and it's something similar. Incomplete on first down, complete short on second down, incomplete on third down. On your touchdown drive, you were able to establish the run a little bit. Kate got a big completion to Wesco for a first down, and you get it all the way in. But I'm looking towards the back half of this game, and honestly, I'm thinking, why was Clemson running the ball so much with so little time on the clock? You had the missed field goal. You had the four and out where you ran it up the middle 4 times with Moffa in the second half. So, yeah, Moffa did have a good box score game here against Louisville. But to your point, John, after that was when I think the tread on the tires became a little bit too much. and down the stretch of the season, like, think about the Pitt game and what all Cade Klubnik was asked to do within the course of that Pitt game, and where he was just carrying the team on his back, and Moffitt was, like, very clearly injured and hindered, and then you had linebackers dropping like flies, and Dee Creighton was in there in the second half of that game as well, and getting picked on at times. Like, there were a lot of moments last year where Clemson ran into a pretty immense amount of adversity that people don't acknowledge. And in that Pitt game specifically...
It was the Pitt game, yeah, because he had over 100 yards against Virginia Tech.
Right. So what the Pitt game, Moffa went 17 for 17? Am I seeing this correctly?
That is correct, yes.
17 carries for 17 yards against Pittsburgh for Phil Moffa. And then you go to the Citadel game, and that's a wash, it is what it is. But you go to the South Carolina game, and I actually will maintain that I thought Cade Klubnik played really well. Phil goes 20 for 66, an average of 3.3 a carry, and you lose. So, like,
well, once again, I still believe that the South Carolina game is on the hands of the defense by not being able to make a tackle.
I agree. I agree. And I also think that the offense had multiple chances to put it away and didn't. I think the hyperfixation on the last drive and the pick, I don't think that those people that are blaming that play understand why Clemson lost that football game. Clemson had about 15 chances to put South Carolina away prior to that on offense and defense and failed to do such every single time, which is the only reason you were in that scenario where you had to go on a game-winning drive. And yeah, Cade made a mistake and Phil made a mistake, and you know, we can place the blame wherever we want to place the blame for that. But John, to your point, you tackle Lenora Sellers, the game is over.
Yeah, I mean, Lenora Sellers was the best football player on the field that day on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, he was. He played a phenomenal game.
It wasn't even close.
He played a phenomenal game. His legs were the game changer.
Yeah, absolutely. Clemson couldn't tackle him. They couldn't make a pursuit angle to save their life in that game.
Yep.
So it was not the, you know, text against here. I don't know if it was Dabo or it was Riley, but the South Carolina game was coached poorly offensively. I just disagree. I think you make a tackle every now and then, you win that football game.
Yeah.
Which is why you made changes on the defensive side of the ball.
Texter gets in and says, I would like to see us play with a little more sense of urgency or rhythm. That being said, I believe in the offense. Defense needs the improvement. If we get that, watch out. Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, one thing I want to see incorporated more frequently this year is tempo and fast-paced offense and hurry-up offense. I think Cade Klubnik is at his best when he does not have to think about everything and when he can just get back up to the line and snap the ball. And Clemson's offense with tempo the last 2 years with Cade has been unbelievably efficient.
My only pushback to that, I agree with you, and I think you would like to see more of it situationally over the course of this season. What is the defense giving you?
Yeah.
Because if the defense is back up to a top 30 unit nationally, then I think you can afford to do that more often.
Yeah.
But if you, because I mean, last year, what'd you finish around? I mean, it was kind of low, middle of the pack, if not lower nationally in terms of like total defense. If you're doing that, then I think you need to kind of slow it down a little bit to give your defense more time to rest and strategize.
If your defense has the turnaround that you're anticipating Tom Allen to be able to, you know, catalyze at the head of the snake, then yeah, you should be going hurry up. But that's a good point, John. Like, if your defense isn't reliable again and you have to play down in distance and you have to manage the clock and you have to manage possessions and, oh, you know, if we get the ball with 8 minutes left in the second quarter, it probably makes more sense for us to try and just bleed this thing because we don't trust the defense. And unfortunately, last year, that was the situation you ended up in more times than not, was you knew you couldn't get a stop because you couldn't defend the run. So
correct. Couldn't defend.
That has to be fixed. Like, it's as simple as that. It's the reason you made the change, and it is what it is. And, like, when I look at the defense, let's take things to that side of the ball, John. 654 Roar, if you want to check in. We've talked the offense. We talk wide receivers. We talk position groups. If you have any more questions, you can get in, and I'll answer them. But I do want to talk about this defense because I'm trying to temper my expectations, in all honesty. I'm trying to not get way too over my skis about what my expectations are for this unit. But when I look on paper, and I see T.J. Parker at one defensive end, and I look on the other side and I see Will Helt, and then I look at the depth with the unit and I see guys like Mayo and Lawson, and you know, a guy like Denhoff is a reliable option, and Patterson and Armand Mason and all those guys on the back end as well. But then I look at the D-tackle room, and Peter Woods is playing his correct position. Demonte Capehart's got a lot to prove, and he's back for another year with more experience, size, and stature. Vic Beaurley, I think that's the most underrated player on this football team to date, and he's shaping up to have a monster season. Stephylan Green, Champ Thompson, Evan Brown-Schuler, don't forget about Amari Adams and Pop Story. The defensive line is loaded from a depth perspective And I'm thinking about loaded from a depth perspective and an upper echelon talent perspective like it was back in the day. Like, I'm not talking Power Rangers, but I'm talking closest rendition to the Power Rangers we've seen. There is a very strong chance that TJ Parker and Peter Woods are selected in the top 10 of the upcoming NFL draft if they can match their level of production that they have in their first two seasons. And it's also important to remember that Woods has been an uber-productive player that has vaulted up NFL draft rankings and been a big-time impact guy while playing multiple different positions, while playing through injuries, and while having fluctuating weight throughout the course of his career. He's had a healthy offseason, he's playing the correct position, he's at a weight that's going to be consistent, and he has the best supporting cast amongst the defensive line throughout the course of his career. TJ Parker on one side, Capehart, next to him at defensive tackle, Helt on the other side of D-end. Clemson's loaded there. That leads us to the next position group, which would be linebacker. Sammy Brown, Wade Woodaz, Jamal Anderson, Jeremiah Alexander, Kobe McLeod, D. Creighton, and Drew Woodaz are the primary group of players that you're looking at to date. Now, we all know Sammy Brown is going to be a star. He started to emerge into a star throughout the course of last season. The big question here is, can Wade Woodaz be that senior and that alpha leader of the room, as many are anticipating him to mold into? I think the answer is yes, and I think one of the biggest benefactors of the Tom Allen hiring is going to be that linebacker group, which I believe to be extremely poorly coached over the last couple of seasons under Coach Goodwin's tutelage. Again, nothing personal, just my honest truth and take of the situation to date, and also, again, the move was made for a reason, so I'm not saying anything that, you know, people don't already know. Tom Allen was able to innovate and be the primary initiator for the, you know, development of Abdul Carter, the development of multiple linebackers in the room for Penn State last year, and a couple of the DBs as well, which leads us to Avion Terrell, Ricardo Jones, Ashton Hampton, Khalil Barnes, Kylan Griffin, you got Strozier, you got Jaden Lucas, Shelton Lewis, all of these guys playing corner or safety. So that's your overall, you know, look of the names you need to know on the defensive side of the ball, John. I've got a couple questions coming your way. Number one, where do you think the strength of this defense lies as far as a unit goes? Number two, where do you think the weakness of this defense lies as far as a unit goes? And number three, who are a couple players that might be flying under the radar that you expect to contribute for Clemson on the defensive side of the ball this year?
From a depth standpoint that I feel best about, I'm going to go with the defensive line, although I need to see health happen here, but you have a lot of able bodies. I feel much better about the depth at tackle than I do at defensive end. I think you are a rolled ankle away from having some of the same problems at defensive end you've had the last couple years. The position group I feel the worst about on the defensive side of the ball would be the safeties. It's not due to a lack of talent. It's due to a lack of experience.
Yeah.
You had R.J. Mickens back there for the last four or five seasons. He is no longer there. So now you are asking a guy who he has played good ball for you. But you're asking a Kylan Griffin to lead the way. You're asking a Ricardo Jones as a true sophomore to be a big-time contributor. You know, you're asking Rob Billings to take that next step, Kylan Webb to take that next step. I don't know. I mean, all those guys from a recruiting standpoint were very highly rated. They were, you know, you beat some top schools out for these guys. But now you don't have a veteran back there in Mickens. These are all younger guys, and you know they need to emerge. I have my reservations about it, especially if Khalil Barnes stays down at the nickel spot. Now, I do think Ronan Hanifin will have, you know, a say in that safety spot as well, but it's a lot of unknown and unproven commodities at that spot, and I do have a little bit of reservation at safety.
Texter gets in and asks Faxon, and do you think Jay Lou could be a better fit at safety, being Jaden Lucas?
I think he's great as a corner if he's healthy, but his shoulder has been an issue since high school.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Is like I know Jay Lou pretty well. I believe in Jay Lou. Like, I'm telling you guys right now, 6'2", athletic freaks like that that are that fast and with the ball skills that Lucas has that can jump that high, that is not something that comes around very often. Like, this was a true five-star recruit out of Malden for a reason. He has the traits. He has the tools. He looks the part. He is an NFL guy body-wise. The issue, to John's point, he's been consistently hurt throughout the course of his Clemson career. He's been pretty good when given opportunities, and I believe in Jaden Lucas's game as a corner. If you want to get weird and get versatile and get flexible with where you could utilize him, I think he's a guy that has the skill set and the capability of doing that. And we also know that regardless of the position you play and regardless of the side of the ball you play, Clemson likes to cross train, and Clemson likes to have guys comfortable and in a position where if you do get in a bind and have to throw somebody into the fire, you're not just going in completely blind. So I don't think it's a, you know, an insinuation that's completely unfair to say, hey, maybe Jay Luke could be a better fit at safety, or maybe he could play some safety this year, and maybe he could help provide some experience to that unit as well entering his senior campaign. I think all that's more than fair. I'm not sure what the plan's going to be with Lucas. You got Hampton on one side, and you got Terrell on the other. That much seems locked up as far as I'm concerned right now. So that leaves you with a couple Swiss Army knives, which is Barnes. He can play nickel, he can play safety, you can put him in the box, he's physical, he can tackle. A lot of those same things can be said about Lucas. Ricardo Jones is probably going to be your free safety. Kylan Griffin's a guy that's got a knack for the football, that's a ball hawk, and at least that's what he's been billed at as and what we've seen so far throughout the course of his college career. So you have options. I think the issue right now in the secondary is you don't necessarily have clear-cut options outside of your two outside corner spots, and you have a lot of different options that have different skill sets and provide different levels of versatility to your unit. Like, if you told me right now who's starting for Clemson in the secondary, I don't know if I could tell you, just to be honest. I don't know. I think they got to play it out in camp, and I think there's still some spots and some starting spots in that back end of the secondary that are being competed for. I told you guys that I love Ricardo Jones. That doesn't mean the staff does. Like, I know they recruited the guy, right? But I think he's really good and ready to play. I'm not in practice every day. That doesn't mean that I'm right. So I think Ricardo Jones is going to be this team's starting free safety. He's one of my guys that I've dug my heels in as a big-time believer in. I think that Avion Terrell and Ashton Hampton are going to start, you know, on opposite sides in the cornerback room, and I would like to believe that Khalil Barnes is probably going to stay in that nickel spot where he's been pretty darn good the past couple of seasons. But there's a lot of unknown right now in the secondary because of that inexperience you referenced, John. And then also a guy like Lucas who could be your X factor. We also haven't even mentioned Corian Gibson. That's a guy that's versatile as well, that was a highly touted recruit that came in. And they have high expectations for as a staff. So a lot going on in the secondary. We'll continue to unpack this. Definitely enjoying this discourse here on the Roar of Clemson football here on a Wednesday morning. Check in with us at 654-ROAR on the other side of a quick break as the final hour of the program continues with Faxon and John here on the Roar.
When you're hiring, have you ever felt like you're missing out on meeting truly great candidates for your roles? It seems impossible to find them, but they have to be out there somewhere, right? Well, they're not hard to find when you know where to go, and that place is ZipRecruiter. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/radio. ZipRecruiter helps 10 million people with their job search every day. And because these people are actively looking for jobs just like yours, it's easy to find the right person right away. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. But if you're not using ZipRecruiter, you're missing out. So see what it's like when the impossible is easy. When you go to ZipRecruiter.com/radio right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/radio. ZipRecruiter.com/radio. Never miss out on great candidates with ZipRecruiter.
I'm Ryan Beasley. My office works with clients in all areas of state and federal criminal defense to include pre-arrest investigations, white-collar defense, as well as student conduct issues at colleges and universities. Our team works in courts across the state to include city court, magistrate court, state court, and federal court. Our responsive and proactive approach in all cases is relationship-driven, client-centric, and resolution-focused. We look forward to the opportunity to work with you. Please give us a call at 864-679-7777 or find us on the web at www.ryanbeasleylaw.com.
Book your next party at Carson Steakhouse in Anderson with a large private dining room to suit all of life's celebrations, corporate and social group events. Host a family or school reunion to remember. Book your reservation and they handle the rest. Double fried chicken wings, fresh baked yeast rolls, hand-cut steaks, grilled teriyaki salmon, and fresh strawberry shortcake, just to name a few delicious menu items. Make your reservation today. Call 226-9400. Again, that's 226-9400. Carson Steakhouse, Anderson.
Hey Clemson family, I'm Jeff Scott, former assistant coach and proud member of 2 national championship teams. Success on the football field takes teamwork, vision, and a great game plan. I partnered with fellow Clemson alum Eric Newton to create Newton Scott & Associates. From Tigertown to Lake Kiwi, we're your championship team, here to help you buy, sell, or build. When it's time to make your next move, trust the winning team, Newton Scott & Associates. Real estate, the Clemson way. Visit us at NewtonScottSC.com.
Discover the transformation your home deserves with East Main Furniture. Our selection ranges from cozy living room sets, sleek dining room tables, bedroom sets, all designed to make your space uniquely yours. And don't forget about our large inventory of Lazy Boy recliners at great prices. Quality, style, and affordability are our promises to you. So why wait? We have the new room you need. Visit us online at eastmainfurnitureeasily.com and start your home makeover today. Visit us at 829 East Main Street, Easley. East Main Furniture, where style meets savings.
Hi, friends. Mickey Pollard here. I would love for you to join us Thursday, 6 to 9 a.m. for the Mickey Pollard Show right here on the Royal. We're going to review the Mets and Braves once again. If there's any big news from the NBA draft, we'll do that as well. But I want you to listen. And how am I going to get you to listen? We're going to talk college football. All college football. Coaches and players and stadiums and uniforms and helmets. We're going to do it 6 to 9 a.m. A big college football show. We'd love for you to text in and join in. Don't miss it. Thursday, 6 to 9 a.m. for the Mickey Pollard Show right here on the Roar.
For a lot of us, saving up a down payment can be the biggest barrier to buying a home. So Rocket Mortgage is lowering down payments to 1% for eligible home buyers with one plus. Because everyone deserves their shot at the American dream. Call 800-4-ROCKET or visit rocket.com to get a head start on your starter home.
Rocket Mortgage, LLC. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Live and local sports talk coming to you from the Upcountry Fiber Studios.
This is 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar.
Serving the five counties of the South Carolina Upstate, Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
The Roar. Now offering great sports talk around the clock. We are The Roar, part of the ESPN family.
About half an hour remaining in the program here on The Roar. Facts and Childress, John Hyde, continuing with Facts on Sports. 654-ROAR is the number if you want to get in. Folks, football season is right around the corner, and there's nothing better than cheering on your favorite team in the comfort of your home with your family and friends. Fort Hill Natural Gas wants to make your game day even better, but it's an everyday type of experience with the folks at Fort Hill Natural Gas. It's convenient, it's efficient, it's affordable. Natural gas can be your MVP. If you're firing up the grill in the summertime for those burgers and brats, keeping everybody warm when the sun goes down in the winter times, natural gas is year-round, and it's going to provide value for you regardless of the time of the calendar. Fast, reliable, always ready to fuel your fun. Make your next game day gathering for football season, or maybe it's a summer bash like what we had at Upcountry Fiber a couple days ago, your best one yet with the folks at Fort Hill Natural Gas. You can visit FHNGA.com and score big on some savings today with the folks at Fort Hill Natural Gas. We've been talking Clemson football, and 654-ROAR is the number if you want to check in. We've been talking secondary here in this past segment and talking a little bit about what the outlook looks like on that side of the ball for the Tigers entering this upcoming campaign. Texter gets in and says, not sure Lucas has the quick hip flexibility to be a cover corner, but he has the speed and length to cover a lot of ground. I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think flipping his hips has been an issue at times, 266, and I think your analysis is correct there. It probably is worth acknowledging that he's dealt with a hip issue throughout the course of his career as well. Like, Lucas is a guy from a physical traits perspective that if he stayed healthy could have gone down as one of the best Clemson cornerbacks of all time. I will reiterate, you never give up and you always continue to take the chance on the guy that's as naturally gifted as Jay Lou is with his body, with his frame, with his athleticism, with his skill set. But I remember 2 years back, like Jay Lou and I had like three classes together. I remember he had that hip surgery and he came in to take one of our final exams, like on the big crutch thing, and was like walking with a borderline cane. And it was just like, man, this guy's body has been through the freaking ringer throughout the course of his Clemson career. So the fact that he's able to get back on the field this year after dealing with a lot of these things, and like, listen, I know I have a little bit of a unique perspective on things, being friends with some of these guys, being in classes with others. People don't realize that some of these injuries are like big time mental impact injuries as well, John, in addition to the physical standpoint of it. Like, you come to college, you get a limited amount of time where you're trying to make your lifelong dreams come to fruition by playing in the National Football League. And you put in all this work on a daily basis, whether it's mat drills in the offseason, whether it's your lifts, whether it's your practices, your workouts, what you're doing, you know, in the summertime on your own dime and with your own trainers and own groups of people and the people that are in your camp. And then you have all that taken away from you just in the split second of one moment. Like, we talk about the Halliburton stuff and how that's going to affect his mental with the Achilles injury. A lot of people don't realize that these kids are still battling, you know, day-to-day life from 18 to 23, being a college student on top of that. So with Lucas, I'm just happy for the opportunity this year for him, John. I'm really happy for Jay Lou. I'm happy for the opportunity that's present. I really hope he can find a way to contribute, whether that be at corner, whether that be at safety, whether that be in the box, or whether that be in dime or nickel or whatever it may be to get him on the field. I think he does possess a very versatile body and skill set, and I think he provides value to this team. But I'll continue to reiterate that I'm having difficulty deciphering who I believe to start in the secondary because, number one, it's a brand new defensive coordinator and brand new scheme that I've got to do more homework on. And number two, you look at Clemson's schedule and you just wonder what the scheme looks like on the other side based on who the opponent is. And it's like, okay, well, who's going to be pass-centric? Who's going to be run-centric? When do we want more nickel? When do we want more dime? When do we want to have four-down linemen? When do we want to have three-down linemen? Like, there's just a lot of different things that go into account for projecting who is going to be playing in the secondary. And admittedly, John, I'm not sure if there's people that are clear front-runners for starting positions as of right now outside of your two opposite corners in Hampton and Avion Terrell. Any thoughts on the secondary before we shift gears and talk a little bit more on position groups and wrap it with around the horn?
Well, I definitely think Khalil Barnes is a known starter at nickel, if we're talking about the secondary.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that.
So I think you're just trying to parse out two safeties between Griffin, Jones, Billings, Venables, Webb, and Hanifin. Noah Dixon, I'm very curious to see how that battle unfolds.
I want Hanifin to get in the mix, man. I'm excited to see what he could do. He's got that take your head off over the type of middle, over the middle type of energy, rather. And I definitely love that. So a texter got in and said, is Cade really the top QB in the nation? Because if Cuse doesn't beat Miami or our field goal kicker doesn't make that long one against SMU, are people still saying that Cade is the top QB? I've got a couple comments on this. So let me walk a couple things out. Number one, quarterback wins are not a statistic. I will forever maintain this behind the microphone because it's the truth. It's a team sport. You have 11 players on offense and 11 players on defense and 100-plus on your roster. Quarterback wins are not a statistic. They aren't. Jalen Hurts isn't the best quarterback in the football. He's not anywhere close. Want to know what he just did? Won the Super Bowl because his team was the best. You have to have a team. So that's... I just want to preface everything I say with that. I don't believe QB wins to be a statistic. I don't think QB win and loss record should be used against quarterbacks. It's a team sport. You need to analyze the individual performances. Now, as far as narratives can go based off of QB win loss, I do understand what you're getting at, Texter, because people will skew the narrative based on whether you win or result or lose the game, right? People that are results-oriented, not process-oriented, or are focusing on the wrong things or want to point the finger at one player, you're going to blame the quarterback, the coach, or the offensive coordinator. That's the big three to blame in football. But as far as the Klubnik stuff goes, if Nolan Hoosier misses that field goal against SMU, does that take away from the fact that Cade was 24 for 41 with 262 yards and four passing touchdowns with having no run game against a team that at that point in time had one loss on the whole season and was 11-1 and ranked higher than Clemson and favored? Does that take away from the fact that, you know, in the South Carolina game, Cade went 24 for 36 for 280, yet he took the majority of the blame for losing that game because of one play at the end of the game? And does that change the fact that, you know, even in games where Cade lit it up on the scoreboard throughout the course of the season, like a game like Florida State, he didn't play as well, but he won the game. So I guess for me, it's always just a little bit of a blurry line between the whole team success at the quarterback spot thing and whether that should be used to penalize your quarterback or not from a narratives perspective. I do believe that there are times where quarterbacks win and lose you games. I think that that's a fair assessment to make. In all honesty, I think there was one result last year that was dictated on, there were two results last year that were dictated on quarterback play for Clemson. The Pitt game and the SMU game. Cade Klubnik won you those games. I don't think Cade Klubnik lost you a singular game last year. So for me personally, I don't really have win-loss record with quarterback attached to my evaluation of those prospects. That's just kind of where I'm at on it, John.
I agree with you about the quarterback wins not being a stat wholeheartedly. But the one thing I think if you're trying to claim that Cade Klubnik is quarterback one in the country going into this season, I think we have a very interesting field that kind of pushes him up a little bit, if you want to. Let me walk that out. A person who is taking a lot of the attention right now, who in 2024 threw for 993 yards, 9 touchdowns, and 2 picks in Arch Manning. Like, he's a weird, awkward part of there that some people are automatically say he's the number one quarterback in the country because he's Arch Manning.
Right.
Right? And if you're, what are you looking at, for college production or NFL draft? If we're talking NFL draft, no, Cade Klubnik is not quarterback one. That would be Garrett Nussmeier, in my opinion. You know, you have those who believe that Sam Leavitt of Arizona State can take a massive step in 2025. I don't know how massive of a step he can take because I also don't know if Arizona State's going to be as hot of a team as they were last year. You have people, you have a quarterback out there like Drew Aller, who I think they have built an entire team around not letting him open it up. Yep. They're going to run the football. They're going to run the mess out of it. They have the best running back room in the country.
Like, we don't really even know what Aller can do in a spread offense, per se.
Like, I feel very good about what Lenora Sellers is, and so I think you have him in that conversation with Cade, but I think you could have a very interesting argument over who you would take. You have a guy like DJ Lagway, for example, who believe that could be the number one overall pick in 2 years. We haven't seen him healthy, and he was 6-1 last year as a starter for Florida, but that was a 7-game sample size down the stretch. And I mean, he played a weird checked out Ole Miss team, and they eviscerated a bad Florida State team. So like, I don't know. So I think we also have a very weird year in terms of trying to say who's the top quarterback in the country coming into it. Cade certainly deserves to be in the conversation. But I think this is a year where we have more argument about that spot than we do in years past. Because you don't have like a Caleb Williams coming back into the sport.
Yes.
You don't have this known commodity that you know is going to be at the top of the draft for, you know, next year's class.
That's what I was going to say is I don't know if the correct word would be a weaker quarterback class, but I think there's more unknown within the quarterback class.
A different type of a quarterback class.
Yeah, like I almost think that this is
what is John Mateer? Right. I don't know. I genuinely don't know what John Mateer is. Playing that schedule that Washington State played last year and all that went along with it versus now being at Oklahoma when you have to carry that team in the SEC, I don't know how that translates.
I think Cade's the best QB in the country, and I think it's fair to say that based off of what we've showcased throughout the last couple of seasons. But again, it's important to temper expectations to an extent from the perspective of more times than not, your QB1 coming into the year is not your QB1 going out of the year. And that is fair. It is. I love Cade. If you've listened to me at all in the last 4 years since I started here, there's probably not a bigger Cade Klubnik believer on planet Earth other than Mama and Papa Klubnik and maybe his grandparents and family. I'm right there. I'm right there with the guy. I love Cade. But a lot of times these guys that get the preseason steam do face a little bit of adversity throughout the course of seasons, and that's fair to acknowledge. Now, I will say this. This is also a unique quarterback class from the perspective of we have some unknowns that are making the leaps to new levels. And what I mean by that is I really freaking believe in this Darian Mensah kid that's headed to Duke. But we haven't seen what he looks like at the P4 level. What about a guy like Luke Altmyer at Illinois who's slated to take the next step? You mentioned Mateer. We saw him in the Mountain West. Now he's playing SEC football, but he's got a better supporting cast around him. Nico Iamalieva has a new destination this year. Carson Beck has a new destination this year. And to everybody rolling their eyes in their car right now, believe it or not, those are still top 10 quarterbacks in this class because it's a weird class and we don't have a ton of guys with a ton of experience. A lot of guys just left. So it's worth mentioning a Haynes King in this discussion. It's worth mentioning a Lagway, a Kevin Jennings from SMU.
A Josh Hoover at TCU.
Exactly. Like, these are guys that somebody's going to have to be the best in the country this year, and somebody's going to have to fill in the top 10. So from a numbers game, it's going to have to be some of these jokers we're referencing.
And I think a name that hasn't even been mentioned is Sawyer Robertson of Baylor. He's going to be in that conversation as
like
well when
too.
All things is said and done.
Oh, yeah, I like him too. Texter says, what I'm hearing sounds way too much like the DJ talk after the Notre Dame game. Hopefully he has worked harder and game matured. Respectfully,
that was one game.
Yeah, I was going to say, Cade just had the third best statistical season in the history of Clemson football at QB. He had 43 touchdowns and 7 turnovers with like almost 4,500 total yards of offense. He was arguably the best quarterback in the country, not named Cam Ward, this past season. You could make the argument it was Cade this past season, especially with how he got progressively better. So respectfully to DJ and you, I don't view that as an accurate comparison or analogy because that's a one-game sample size and a team that Trevor was always slated to come back. This is Cade's team. Cade's earned his stripes. He's earned his respect. He's not getting this hype for no reason, guys. So I'm really excited about this year. Texter says, what are your thoughts on Castellanos at FSU? Outside of all the idiocy in the media the last couple days, I'm going to whisper, I actually kind of like it, and I think it's going to work. I think it's going to work to the tune of 7 or 8. I think it's significantly better than the, you know, square peg in the round hole of Bill O'Brien trying to micromanage a pro-style offense. And guess what? Thomas Castellanos does nothing well on a football field that Bill O'Brien is looking for out of a quarterback.
Except carry a whole team by himself.
Yeah, that was a ridiculous comment in its own entity. But in all seriousness, like, this is the same guy that also told Jalen Milroe that he wasn't a quarterback. He doesn't want a mobile quarterback. He wants a guy to stand in the pocket and be structured. It's not what Castellanos is. Now, Castellanos is in a place where he can rock out. And where has Mike Norvell been the most successful for every step of his career? With a mobile quarterback at the helm that can create outside of structure, because Mike Norvell isn't some offensive genius like many would like to convince you, and he's not great at scheming guys open. So he needs his guys to go be players and create, which every coach needs. It's not a slight on Norvell. He's just a little bit more reliant on that than some. So I actually think that the Castellanos things works to an extent. Florida State is not a contender for the ACC. Florida State is not a contender for any sort of silverware. Florida State probably isn't beating Alabama week one. Could you convince me that they get to 8-4 or maybe 8-5 with a bowl game win? Yeah, you could convince me of that. And do I think the Castellanos thing is as bad as the DJ thing? No, nowhere close. I think he's a significantly better player. I just think it was the worst possible schematic fit on planet Earth last year, and I was anticipating O'Brien to let him like play his game, and O'Brien put the reins on him pretty much immediately from the start of the season to the conclusion of his career at BC, which came with a
after the Florida State game, because he ran all over him and threw for like 110 yards in that game.
Yeah, I guess I just don't really understand why they didn't let him run more. It's not my team. Bill O'Brien's accomplished more and knows more about football than I will ever know. But at the end of the day, like, I am always somebody that is going to be an advocate for adapting my system to fit the players I have on my team. Because if you are trying to put a player in a box and you are not accentuating his skill sets and getting the most out of said player, I think that's a bad decision from your coach. I'm not saying that O'Brien needed to just completely sacrifice the principles and foundational pieces of his offense, but you can budge a little and meet in the middle to try and like get the best out of your player. Because we say what we will about Castellanos, he's clearly a better option than Grayson James, who couldn't get off the pine at FIU. At that point, it was a political warfare between Castellanos and O'Brien, who had allegedly been butting heads behind the scenes on this exact thing, which is the schematics of the offense and the fact that Castellanos wanted to run. And as we heard yesterday in the media, so teams can't just sit back in zone coverage, keep him in the pocket, and he has nobody to throw to. So while I don't believe that to be entirely accurate from Castellanos, there is some legitimacy to his gripes about that scheme and that structure, which hindered him as a player. I think he will be much more successful at Florida State this season. Ultimately, I don't think it ends up mattering more than being a 7-5 or 8-4 football team. That's where I'm at on Castellanos. We're going around the horn. It's draft day. We're going to hit Braves in the pitching matchup. We're going to hit the NBA draft to a certain degree as well. But I want to continue this Clemson football discourse into the final segment of the program. If you'd like to check in with questions, analysis, comments, or more, 654-ROAR is the number if you want to beat the buzzer on the Wednesday edition with Faxon and John.
Actual price will depend on product and subscription plan. Featured products are compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. See website for details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Want a boost in and out of the bedroom? Hims has you covered. Introducing a new 2-in-1 approach to level up your game. Tadalafil for better bedroom performance and zinc for testosterone support. Put it all together and you've got what you need to turn things all the way up. Getting started is simple. Just go to hims.com/radio to start your free online visit. Through Hims, you can access ED treatments including pills, chews, and more. 100% online. No office visits, no pharmacy lines. Just fill out a simple intake form and a licensed medical provider will determine if treatment's right for you. If prescribed, it ships free and discreetly to your door. Find affordable treatment options at up to 95% less than brand names at hims.com/radio. That's hims.com/radio. hims.com/radio.
If you haven't been to Elkmont, you haven't been to Clemson. There's something for everyone, including great lifestyle, men's and women's clothing, jewelry, and the most comfortable shoes from On Running Shoes, Birkenstocks, and UFOs. If it's game day you want, Elkmont has a great selection of all things Clemson with great brands like Vuori, Patagonia, Z Supply, and more. Find Elkmont in Powdersville and Clemson or online at ElkmontTradingCompany.com. That's ElkMont TradingCompany.com. Go Tigers.
Make living easy this summer with Kraft Stove Store and Patio, America's best in outdoor furniture. Make sure your outdoor space has everything it needs to impress your guests this summer with everything Kraft Stove Store and Patio can provide by Lloyd Flanders, Hanamint Summer Classics, and Palm Springs Rattan. You can special order anything you need for your patio, porch, and pool furniture with Craft Stove Store and Patio, located at 3002 Wade Hampton Boulevard in Taylor.
Craft Stove Store and Patio.
Warm weather offers a great opportunity to get creative in your kitchen and your backyard as you're preparing meals for your family, friends, and neighbors. And nothing makes your creativity more enjoyable than the selection of ingredients you'll find at your neighborhood Ingles Market. From hand-cut steaks to seafood, locally grown fruits and vegetables from right here in the Carolinas. Whether it's breakfast, lunch, dinner, or a weekend cookout, rely on your local Ingles to have what you need. If you're on your way to the beach or the mountains, use your Ingles Advantage card to save on fuel purchases before you hit the road. Shop your Ingles Pharmacy to save on prescriptions. If you're having a family get-together or reunion, have the Ingles Deli create a custom platter for you. The Ingles Floor Department has beautiful arrangements to accent your home and your table. So take it from me, you'll find everything you need at your local Ingles. Low prices, love the savings.
Looking for a tractor that works as hard as you do? Come to Mahindra of Anderson, your local source for the toughest, most reliable tractors on the market. Whether you're working the farm, maintaining your property, or need heavy-duty power, Mahindra has the perfect tractor, UTV, implement, or trailer for the job. Buy it new, shop pre-owned, schedule your service appointment, or order parts with the best customer service right here in the upstate of South Carolina. Visit Mahindra of Anderson at 507 Pyramid Dairy Road or online at mahindraofanderson.com.
Hey Tiger fans, this is Kathy Becker, General Manager at Everlon Independent Living in Clemson. Everlon offers seniors independent living options like you've never seen before. Chef-prepared meals, activity programs, a movie room, transportation services, and a fitness room. All within walking distance to Patrick Square restaurants and businesses. Everlon is all-inclusive with no long-term commitments. Call today and book your tour. 864-499-8318. Visit us online at everlonliving.com.
Tigers, Gamecocks, Bulldogs, and more. We're getting you ready for the upcoming football season every day, all summer long. We are the Roar, where every day is game day.
Kick it!
We welcome you back in. Facts on Sports with Faxon and John continues right here on The Roar. It's the final segment of the program. Hey, real quick, Spectrum Paint. It's your independent and family-owned paint source with locations in Clemson, Greenville, Spartanburg, and Landrum. We've met with the folks at Spectrum Paint, including Esme Carter. These are great folks. They care. They're experts. This is my job to do sports. There are things that are coming out of Esme's mouth when we met with her that I didn't even understand, but I was like, wow, how do you have this much level of expertise for one subject? You know, I know Mickey does stuff with some tree companies and talks about how these are the experts. These are the paint experts, and they're going to put you in a position to succeed, whether it's Benjamin Moore, Pittsburgh Paints, Graco, Renner Wood Coatings. They can do quite legitimately everything you need in the paint world, and they have four convenient locations here in the upstate of South Carolina with excellent customer service, and it's an independent and family-owned business. That seems like a win-win for me in all facets. I would check out the folks at Spectrum Paint if you have any needs in the paint world, large and small projects, professional or DIY, it doesn't matter. They can assist you and they can make your life easier. You want to go with the best of the best, and that is the folks at Spectrum Paint. You can visit them online at spectrumpaint.com, or you can find their location nearest to you to connect with their local sales team in Clemson, Greenville, Spartanburg, and Landrum. A wide array of brands at Spectrum Paint, spectrumpaint.com. Final segment of the program. We've been talking Clemson football, and man, it's starting to kick in. It's starting to kick in. The excitement's starting to kick in. We're going to be at ACC kickoff in Charlotte in less than a month, and man, I just got a smile on my face. I can't freaking wait, man. I'm ready to spot the ball against LSU right now. Let's get Hank in here on the phone lines. Wants to talk some Cade and Clemson football. Hank, it's always a pleasure, brother. Hope all is well in your world.
Yeah, I'm doing great. Hope you guys are too. You know, I heard you talking about in the last segment about, you know, how some people in the fan base are still not particularly sold on Cade and have this belief that maybe, you know, he turns back into a pumpkin and that last season was a bit of an outlier. And I personally don't really get that. I know I have friends who do too. And, you know, I know he threw I think four interceptions. It was a really low number.
Yeah.
And I think that has a chance to go up. But I think that's primarily because if you look at a lot of the games, especially in conference play last year, it felt like, especially games in which we had a lead, we got a little conservative with the play calling and really didn't want to take risks. And I think there's a chance that that doesn't happen as much this year. And I just think that there's a chance for those numbers to go up. Some of the interceptions too, but you know, I think there's going to be, especially in the third year with him as a starter and Garrett Riley as OC, I mean, I just think there's going to be even more comfort and even more trust there. And I know that there are probably some reasons we gloss over on the offense, mainly, you know, whatever the situation at running back is going to end up being as some points of concern, but I just don't think those particularly apply to Cade. I've heard some people say, oh, maybe you look at some sophomore slumps from some of the, you know, freshman wide receivers from last year, and maybe, but, you know, you've still got some very proven targets no matter what. And I actually think Cade has a chance to have a really good statistical season, and I actually think he's going to have maybe one of the more legitimate pushes for Heisman from a Clemson player because of that running back situation, especially if it is Adam Randall getting a lot of those plays. I would imagine one of the things they'll be concerned about is his run blocking and the way to, picking up blitzers.
Yeah.
And I would imagine one of the ways they counter that is having him, you know, shift out as a release point and have him be a threat in the screen game, obviously, as a natural receiver. So I think, you know, a lot of the running stats we've seen over the last few years could shift into, you know, check down passing stats that end up where Cade could have a couple games with like 400 passing yards where 80 of them ended up coming in screens and dump offs. But he was a five star. He showed pretty good flashes as a freshman. I know that sophomore year was terrible, but he was really good last year. And I just don't really understand the people who think that season was the fluke. Instead of his first season as a starter with a brand new OC, I think it's much more likely that last year was the norm. And again, maybe some of those numbers come a little back down to earth, but I don't think there's any real reason not to have a solid, maybe an 8 out of 10 amount of trust in Cade going into the season. But just wanted to get in with that, and I'll take you guys' thoughts off the air. Thanks.
Hey, Hank, keep calling back in, brother. We appreciate you. Seriously, keep calling back in. That's great stuff. I think he's on the money with 99% of that, truly. Listen, look at Cade Klubnik and look at the players around Cade Klubnik. And this is why I don't like doing the quarterback win-loss thing. This is a team sport, guys. This is a team sport where your team has to be good for you to win. Your quarterback just can't be good. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league every year. How many times has Josh Allen had these phenomenal seasons in the NFL? You have to have a team. And when you look at Cade's team 2 years ago, you look at an offensive line that was a revolving door of personnel due to injuries and coached by a different O-line coach that was relieved of his duties. You look at a wide receiver room that was crippled and riddled due to injuries with significantly less talented players than your current crop of receivers. And yeah, you know what? Cade had a little bit better of a run game to rely on with Shipp and Maffa. And out of fairness, we do have to acknowledge that. But I think Hank's points are wholeheartedly correct at just about every step of the way throughout that discourse, because when you look at last year, the situation improves, the quarterback improves. This isn't rocket science. This is what I tried to tell you guys entering the season, is that Cade was primed to take a leap forward because his team had gotten significantly better. Now, that goes without saying, the individual has to get better as well, and the individual has to progress, but a large part of expediting that process is improving the supporting cast around who the quarterback is. And what Clemson has now done in back-to-back seasons is improved Cade Klubnik's supporting cast. So you improved it from the sophomore year to the junior year, and Cade takes a monumental leap in growth, and you're now improving it again. I don't understand what the hesitation may be. Now, on the Heisman stuff, I actually think Cade's alive to win the Heisman this year, surely because I think Clemson's going to play in a lot of competitive games. I think this is the most underrated, difficult schedule in the country. People are going to brush it aside and go, ACC. That's a load of garbage, and you don't need to listen to those people. Clemson plays a tough schedule this year. You have a really tough schedule with the way that games break when on the calendar and where on the calendar. I don't know about y'all, Friday night at Louisville freaking terrifies me on a short week. I've just got to be honest. Clemson's better than Louisville. They're going to be favored to win the game. They're going to have a better record than Louisville. But all of those things were applicable this season, or this past season rather, and they marched into your trap and took it over and dominated you, if we're being frank. So Clemson is going to have a chance to make history this year in multiple ways. They have the talent. They have the coaching, presumably. They have the quarterback, which is the most important part of all of this. But it's not a given. And you still have to go out there and earn it, and you still have to go out there and play to the standard on a week-to-week basis. And it starts week one. Let's face it. Clemson's been crap in openers the last couple of years, all right? You go back to 2023, you dump the Duke game. I was on the sidelines for that horror show. It was terrible. It felt like everything was being ripped out of my body in that game. You beat Georgia Tech 3 years back in the little Mercedes-Benz kickoff in Brent Key's first year. That GT team was garbage, and there's nothing to call home about there. The year prior, you got your butt kicked by Georgia. So you've lost three out of your last four openers, which is, if I'm being completely transparent here on June 25th, my biggest hesitation entering the season for Clemson. I think Clemson is better than LSU. I think Clemson might be significantly better than LSU when we look back at the end of the season. But guess what? The game's not being played at the end of the season. The game's being played week one. So you have to set the tone for the season with your opening game performance. And I don't want people to lose sight of that. And I also don't want to put too much pressure on one game, right? The season's not over if you lose the game. But this Clemson football team has a chance to validate all of our hype, all of our expectations, all of our belief immediately against an SEC opponent, which we can poke fun at the SEC. You didn't beat one last year. You have a chance to put the narrative to bed before the narrative even starts this season by beating an SEC team in the first week of the season and beating a team that's going to be ranked and nationally ranked throughout the course of the season to start the season. And it's a big opportunity, but you got to go out there and win games, man. Like, all of this stuff is well and dandy. And yes, Clemson on paper is probably the best team in the country entering the season. But how many teams have we said that about in the last 5 to 10 years that have not won the national championship? It's more than actually ended up winning it. Ohio State this year is the anomaly. It is.
But in the old system, they wouldn't have even had an opportunity to play for the title.
Which is crazy. Which is absolutely crazy. John, I know we got to talk NBA. I know we got to talk a little MLB. But I really enjoyed talking Clemson football here. It's got me excited for the season. Anything to add on any of these plethora of topics for Clemson football before we shift gears?
No, I look forward to breaking the Tigers down over the next 2 months and a couple of days. But the opener will be here before we know it. You know, you said something to me before we came on the air this morning. And I'm a little shocked it hasn't come to fruition.
Same here.
You said we were going to have a max contract player in the NBA traded before we get off the air today. Now, granted, we still have 5 more minutes.
We have 5 minutes.
One, do you think we will see a big-time, big contract player move by the end of Out of Bounds? And then two, give us your Ace Bailey prediction for tonight and kind of some hot takes for this NBA draft this evening. And also your thoughts on the Atlanta Braves going for win number 3 in a row against the New York Mets.
All right, so some rapid fire here stuff. First and foremost on the trade stuff. Shams says last night on the late night Sports Center with Scott Van Pelt to not go to sleep because it's just don't sleep. Something's coming. He's also described this as what is going to be the craziest NBA offseason ever. Now again, part of Shams' job is to generate entertainment, and part of Shams' job is to generate, you know, eyeballs on ESPN. I get it, he's doing his job, but he also doesn't BS about things like this. Somebody big is getting traded today, okay? I don't know when it's going to come. I don't know if it's going to be Jaylen Brown. I don't know if it's going to be Derek White. I don't know who it's, I don't know if it's going to be Giannis. I don't know who it's going to be. There are going to be multiple moves of big-time dollar sign players throughout the course of today. It's a matter of when, not if. That's all but been confirmed. I think that the big if entering the NBA draft tonight is Jaylen Brown. I think Derek White is likely to be moved by the Boston Celtics. I don't think Jaylen Brown is likely to be moved, but if he is, it's going to be tonight, and it's going to be on draft day because Boston has effectively shedded $260 million off of their payroll and tax allocation for this upcoming season in the last 3 days. I mean, ownership's got to be buying Brad Stevens a freaking fruit basket and rolling out the red carpet for the job that he's done for their wallets.
Well, now they can afford much more than a fruit basket.
Oh, absolutely. They might you can get them whatever you want with that $260 million.
Can they give some of that money over to the Red Sox so then they can buy players for Liverpool?
Please stop buying players for Liverpool. I would take a Red Sox World Series. Please stop. Stop. I hate the Red Sox owners for so many different reasons. Liverpool doesn't need to get any better. They won the Premier League, John. But in all seriousness on the NBA draft stuff, I do think we see big moves tonight. We didn't get to the Porzingis move today because I'm saving that for tomorrow. The Hawks are going to be a top 4 seed in the East, folks. And I'm going to tell you why tomorrow. I think they're the Pacers 2.0. And I'll also tell you why tomorrow. But we got to talk about Ace Bailey. Ace Bailey has come out and denied 2 teams already. I just sent you this tweet on Twitter, John. It's a report coming out from Evan Sittery with The Athletic and a couple other sources there. Actually, he's with Forbes now. Used to be with The Athletic with Sittery. You can get him on Twitter at eSittery. Ace Bailey's camp has let it be known that they do not want to be drafted by the Hornets or Jazz. Bailey is trying to force his way to a preferred destination outside the top five, presumably Washington. So I'll go with the layup here. I think he goes to the Wizards. I don't have sources clearly for on a national standpoint in the NBA, but all indications and reports that we are being told would indicate that Ace Bailey is trying to force his way to the Wizards, which, let's also face it, that's a first. I've never in my life heard of anybody forcefully trying to make their way to the Washington Wizards.
Until Bradley Beal tries to find his way back in the next couple of months. I'm going to say the Charlotte Hornets take him.
Ooh. I really hope that happens.
Just because they are a dysfunctional franchise, they don't know what they're doing, so it would make a lot of sense that you go out and draft the one player in the draft board who doesn't want to play for you the most.
Yeah, that would be pretty
on
par.
And then pretty on par for Charlotte to then watch them force him to play with LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller and win another 12 games next season.
And I'm sure all three of them will end up hurt again because that's typically
they'll be out by Christmas.
The whole team just has to mass casualty and injury in the first half of the year in Charlotte. It's like an unspecified requirement of the job to play for the Hornets.
They're going to try to force him to be a team player, and it's going to be a disaster from start to finish in his Charlotte tenure.
Honestly, that's the perfect fit because they don't even have a team. They have a bunch of me's. They have a bunch of individual guys. Like that is the match made in heaven for a team led by LaMelo Ball is to get another selfish me guy like Ace Bailey in there, John. But Bravo's talk in the last 60 seconds. I think the Braves lose tonight. I think Didier struggles a little bit early. I'm high on the kid long-term, as I've outlined, but Clay Holmes is a really good pitcher for the New York Mets. I've mentioned the importance of chasing him early. If the Braves can get him out prior to the fifth inning, or prior to the conclusion of the fifth inning again, they win. If they don't, they lose. I think they win tomorrow regardless and win 3 of 4. That was my pre-series prediction, was win the first two, lose Fuentes Day, win the cap with Holmes against Griffin Canning. I'm sticking to it. I think the Braves lose tonight and win tomorrow. So that's where I'm at on Atlanta.
Braves win. They're playing the Mets. Come on now.
They are playing the Mets. Hopefully that this continues, and hopefully I'm owning it tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., and that's when we'll see you, folks. William Walken Bush and Ben Milstead are up next with Out of Bounds. Stay tuned to The Roar for that, and we appreciate everybody that got in with us today.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson, WAHT-AM.